Hello, and welcome to show number 2608 of Eyes on Success, a weekly program empowering the visually impaired with expert advice, personal stories, and the latest in technology and accessibility. I'm Nancy Goodman-Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy.
I am not the most traveled person with sight loss, certainly, but I have enough experience. And of course, being a certified vision rehabilitation therapist, I have a lot of tips and tricks to share with people to make life easier and to make traveling easier.
And as you'll hear, today's guest certainly does have some very good travel tips for everybody.
Traveling with sight loss becomes far more manageable when you know what to expect and how to prepare. We'll talk with Lynn Jensen, a nurse and vision rehabilitation therapist, about practical travel skills, safety strategies, guide dog planning, and simple tools that can help make every trip smoother and more enjoyable. But first, for our tip of the week, this week's tip comes from Lynn Jensen.
My tip of the week is this. Don't let low vision or blindness stop you from traveling.
And you've certainly done a lot of it and have lots of advice for people who do want to travel.
Hopefully what's in your book will give more people more confidence and get out and try it and find out that it can be fun and rewarding and successful.
Yeah, I don't claim to have all the answers, but by reading my book, hopefully it will get the wheels turning so you can figure out a system or a strategy that works for you.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
the My Tools for Living retail store at the Chicago Lighthouse, offering tools and technologies to support everyday life across the vision loss spectrum, as well as ongoing advice. More information is available at mytoolsforliving.com.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Let's start by meeting Lynn.
My name is Lynn Jensen. I am a registered nurse and a certified vision rehabilitation therapist. For 24 years, I worked at a vision rehabilitation center in Vancouver, Canada, and today I work as an independent consultant, delivering independent living skills training to individuals and groups, both virtually and in person. I lost all of my sight at the age of 27, just 8 months after graduating from the University of British Columbia School of Nursing. My sight loss was sudden and totally unexpected. It was the result of a brain injury.
That must have been a huge change and interesting twist in your life.
Absolutely. I mean, that's an understatement. I wouldn't wish it on anyone. I tell my clients all the time, though, losing your vision sucks. Living with sight loss does not suck. It's just getting to that place.
Well, it sounds like you have quite a positive attitude. And talking about being able to do whatever you want, it sounds like you must do quite a bit of traveling from the book we're going to talk about today. So tell us about the name of the book, and then we can talk about the details.
The title of the book is called Best Kept Secrets for Travelers with Sight Loss. For many years, I facilitated an independent living skills training program called Best Kept Secrets for Living with Sight Loss. So I just adapted the title slightly.
Well, and it's a great title because you cover so many different aspects of traveling and you give tip after tip after tip for how to do it successfully. So I think it's a great title.
And it doesn't mean you have to travel to some exotic location. You know, you could be just going to the next state or the province to visit a family member, or even stay in your own city at first, just to build up your confidence in traveling. And then you can start broadening your horizons, so to speak.
Can you start by giving a brief overview of the organization of the book?
The book is organized into distinct chapters. One is preparing for your travels, and that has sub chapters including getting yourself ready, planning for your trip, using lists and reminders. There is a chapter on packing your suitcase, the hotel while you're away, traveling by air, traveling by sea, traveling by rail, traveling with a guide dog, and traveling with a guide dog by air, sea, or rail. And the last chapter is returning back home. I truly believe the index is one of the best parts of the book. There are sections on utilizing the six vision enhancement techniques. The appendix is called Six Ways to See Better. For those of you who don't know, a vision enhancement technique is a way that you can change your environment in order to see better. So this chapter or appendix is specifically for people who have some functional vision. There's a list of the tools and technology used throughout the book. Another favorite is Lynn's top 25 tips for restaurant dining, self-protection techniques, sighted guide technique, the accommodations at Vancouver International Airport. And the last appendix is the alt descriptions for photos. I'm a stickler when it comes to descriptions for photographs. So I made sure that that information was readily available to my readers with sight loss, including the book cover. How often do you get information about the book's cover? I mean, I've read so many audiobooks, but I don't have a clue what the cover of the book looks like. And I made sure that information was available.
I like that. Very nice.
So you kind of hinted at this, but I'd like to make it a little more explicit. In your book, which is nominally about traveling, many of the items refer to basic living skills, how to improve a situation so you can actually make better use of your vision, your safety skills, your sighted guide traveling skills, on and on. There's, I'd say half the book is equally adaptable to just daily living in your hometown as it is to being on the road, but it's valuable to have for traveling as well.
So true. And as I mentioned, that one subsection in the first chapter is called Getting Yourself Ready. It starts there. You need to learn new skills, learn new technologies, and of course, build confidence in yourself. And that's why I suggest that you start small. You know, take a hotel in your own city. You know, explore the city like a tourist. And if it gets to be too much, you know what? Take a bus home. Focus on those areas where improvement is needed and then try it again. And then you can start traveling to somewhere a little farther away from home.
What I thought was interesting in your book was that many of the tips were kind of things that we may even take for granted sometimes, but that we do, but we don't really think about. And it's nice to sort of codify that in a list sometime, particularly when you're traveling and you're out of your comfort environment. It's nice to think about some of these things ahead of time, because once you're there, it's too late.
Exactly. A lot of preparation needs to be done while you're at home. So find out what accommodations are available to you in the city that you're traveling to, or at the event or venue or attraction that you're going to. You know, make sure that you have the tools available so that you can take advantage of those accommodations. For example, when I traveled to Disneyland, I wanted to take advantage of the audio description tool that was available. I needed to make sure that I packed a set of suitable headphones.
And it's nice to know when you go to these venues or other places what accessibility accommodations might be there ahead of time. Because once you're there, you don't want to waste vacation time hunting around for what's available to you that could make the vacation more pleasurable.
Or it might have required pre-booking.
Yes, that often happens.
Oh, and some things require pre-booking 2 or 3 months in advance. We've been caught by that a couple of times. That's frustrating.
It can be, yes.
The other thing that's interesting is some of your tips are so simple, but one may not have thought about it. I thought you had this little tip about how to find your hotel door when you're in a hotel, and you had the idea of putting a rubber band on the handle. Well, how many people put a rubber band on the handle of their hotel door?
I love that idea. In fact, that's one of the tips that I share in the sample of my audiobook on my website. And they're readily available. That same elastic band, or an elastic band, I should say, can also be used to identify certain toiletries in the bathroom.
Speaking of hotels and bathrooms, because you just brought it up, I thought your tip of keeping the lid shut on a hotel bathroom was just so on the mark. Because what you do at home is up to you. But in hotels, as you pointed out, they often put stuff above the toilet. You know, they'll put the bath towels. Well, they're not likely to go anywhere, but there may be a washcloth, and that's pretty small. And it's real easy for things to fall into the toilets.
Or the spare toilet paper roll.
Oh, yeah, that would be unfortunate.
I was going to say, that's why I encourage people to also pack some split pool noodles or foam pipe insulation so you can put it on those sharp desk corners or door edges. I can't tell you how many times I've clipped my head on a sharp corner of a wall or a door. I don't practice what I preach. So self-protection techniques, they are so important. My forehead, I tell my clients I look like a hockey player. I've had stitches so many times.
Reminds me of someone else, eh?
Is that somebody you know really well?
Yeah, like me. I mean, being blind, it's very easy to walk into a wall and head split very easily.
They do, and a lot of blood, too.
Right. Fortunately, Nancy has become very competent with putting on Steri-Strips.
Yeah, that's why I suggest always packing Steri-Strips in your toiletries bag. And as you get more confident in your role, being a person with sight loss, you know, you forget. I forget I can't see. And then, of course, as you get more confident, you also start to move around your environment faster.
Right. And that can lead to accidents.
Exactly.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about traveling with a guide dog. I know when you get your guide dog, they ask you what you expect to do with the dog. And, you know, some people like to travel and some people don't. And they give you dogs that are better trained for traveling situations. But I gather there's all sorts of special tips that can make this more successful.
Traveling with a guide dog, in my mind, is just like traveling with a young child. There's a lot of preparation that goes into traveling with a dog, especially if you're traveling internationally. And of course, you want to make sure that that dog is just as happy in your new environment as you are. I suggest packing each meal in a separate Ziploc bag just to make things convenient. That way, if you do head out on a day trip, you can just throw the appropriate number of bags into your day pack. You always want to pack extra food and medications just in case you're delayed for whatever reason. And of course, when traveling internationally, you'll want to find out what restrictions are present. So if traveling to a certain country, you might need to follow certain protocols, have certain vaccinations done. I know when I traveled to Norway, I had to have a rabies titer test done within 30 days of entering the country. So there's certain guidelines you do have to follow in order to get into that country without any difficulties.
You've traveled for pleasure, for business, with colleagues, with friends, with family members. How does that change things if you're out of town with a colleague versus your sister?
It takes time just to build a rapport. You know, if you're traveling with a companion that you don't know very well, they need to get to know you and your quirks. And let's take a look at sighted guide technique, for example. I personally, if I'm walking with my guide dog, of course, I'm going to be standing on the person's left side when they offer me sighted guide. Whereas if I am getting sighted guide and I don't have my guide dog, I want to be on the person's right. You know, it's just these little quirks that you need to iron out, or how you like to have things described to you, whether it's the position of the chair based on cardinal directions, or maybe you like to use left, right, or degrees. So maybe the chair is 60 degrees to your right. You know, it's just getting to know those, I don't know if nuances is the correct term, but and that's why it's really important that you have a basic understanding of sighted guide techniques so you can relay the information. There might be a time where you're at the airport and you need to instruct an individual on proper sighted guide. So practice doing that at home so that you can be effective at relaying that information on the spot whenever you need it. Or if you're at a restaurant, when the server puts the plate in front of you, you know, ask them, could you please describe what is on my plate using the clock face, for example. So my roast beef is at 6 o'clock. My mashed potatoes are at 3 o'clock. My peas are at 9 o'clock. There are so many teachable moments.
And you just have to watch if you're sitting across the table from someone, they have to know how to describe the clock upside down.
So true.
And it takes people a while to accommodate. I mean, I like to go hiking, for example, but I won't take a new person I haven't been walking around just town with on sidewalks the first time on a hike, you know, because I sort of build up my trust in them and they learn the guiding skills by degrees. So, you know, I'll become comfortable with somebody on normal terrain before I'll let them take me on a hike, for example.
Yeah. Or sometimes when you're doing sighted guide with a friend or a travel companion, you might want to be standing side by side so you can have a conversation. And in that instance, you might also want to use your cane at the same time, because that person's going to be distracted. They might miss, you know, a imperfection in the sidewalk or a curb.
Well, that's the other thing. You need people with a certain amount of attention to detail, right? They have to catch some of those things to warn you, and they don't think about giving people that feedback normally.
Yeah, and it's a lot of work on their part too. So if you're out and about with somebody for, you know, 12 hours in the day, it can be quite exhausting for that person to be on alert that whole time. So if you take control of that situation by using the cane, you know, you've got some backup to keep you safe, right? So then you're taking on the responsibility.
One thing we've learned, so for anybody who hasn't figured this out yet, Pete's totally blind and I'm fully sighted and we usually travel as a pair. But you're right, sometimes I get tired explaining things all day. And one thing we do to mitigate that is we'll take guided tours and let the tour guide explain for an hour or two. And then that gives me a little bit of a rest.
Excellent idea.
Out of the many, many tips in the book, are there any you'd like to highlight?
Oh my, there are so many tips in that book that are of particular interest to me. I mean, just packing your bag, for example. If you're traveling with somebody, make sure you are part of the packing and the unpacking so you know where to find things. And be consistent. If you're going to travel regularly, well, keep that toiletries bag in the same part of your suitcase. As I mentioned in the book, you know, group the articles of clothing that you need for the day in a Ziploc bag. So everything you need for that day is there. So your shirt, your shorts, your undergarments. And if you have to go down the hall to a communal bathroom, let's say you're at a hostel, you just have to grab the wardrobe change bag, your toiletries bag, and you're on your way. You've got everything you need.
Yeah, I think organization like that is particularly important for people who can't see. I rely on that quite a bit. You know, everything has its place in our house. And when we travel, Nancy packs the bag. Well, she likes to pack it. She doesn't like the way I pack. But she puts everything in a specific spot. So I always know where things are. It's always the same. And I don't have to go hunting around.
One other tip that you suggested that we've never thought of was using a tray for all of your small items. So when you get to the hotel, you have a tray. It's got little walls to keep your watch and your keys and whatever other little odds and ends you need to keep track of. And you sometimes travel with two in contrasting colors so that if the table is dark, you use one, and if the table is light, you use the other. And I just thought that was so clever.
Trays are extremely helpful. And if you don't have a cafeteria tray, just use a box. The box under the 24 pop cans makes a great cafeteria tray to contain items when you're on the road. Or you could just take a regular box and cut it down so you have a little bit of a lip all the way around.
I do that somewhat even at home. I have little boxes that partition the drawers so I can easily find small things in the drawer.
Great idea. Dollar stores, IKEA, great sources of containers to keep items.
Around the house, Pete organizes so many things by location. He has this bottle of eye drops in this drawer and that bottle of eye drops in that drawer. But when we travel, he can't do that. So everything goes into the bathroom bag. But the bathroom bag, now it's got all these little pockets and pouches. And so the one bottle of eye drops is over here. And it's always over here, you know. It doesn't matter if the trip was 10 years ago, it was in the same spot.
Like Pete said, a place for everything, everything in its place.
Do you have any specific tips for people who have some useful residual vision?
It depends on, you know, how much vision you have. You might be able to utilize color to identify objects. So placing a brightly colored red electrical tape around a shampoo bottle, or maybe a piece of yellow electrical tape around a conditioner bottle so you can instantly identify it using your remaining vision.
And make sure to bring some extra tape with you just in case some helpful hotel employee peels off the tape you just put onto the bottles. You've talked about many interesting topics that you raised in the book. If somebody wants to get hold of the book, can you remind them of its name and tell them where they can get it?
Best Kept Secrets for Travelers with Sight Loss is available on my website, blindtraveltips.com, or through the main online book retailers. If you need to get in touch with me, you can send me an email at info@blindtraveltips.com.
And there's also a contact page on her website if you'd like to get in touch.
Your book is mostly about taking care of yourself, but the converse is getting your providers and other people to treat you in proper ways. Can you talk about the article you wrote on that topic?
I wrote an article that appeared in Canadian Nurse back in 2012. It's called Focusing Your Care. And that article is meant for people in the healthcare profession, how best to support a patient with sight loss. It's an awesome resource. I would encourage you to pass it on to your family, your healthcare professionals. That appeared in Canadian Nurse in March 2012. So if you do a Google search and you just say Focusing Your Care, Canadian Nurse, March 2012, you're sure to get a hit.
Tell us if there's one particularly memorable trip that you'd like to share.
I've been on some spectacular vacations over the years, but one trip that was most memorable was back in 2002. I was a relatively new guide dog handler at the time, and I was traveling with a good friend who had a guide dog as well. We flew into SeaTac International Airport, and we took a cab to a beautiful hotel in the city. Neither one of us was familiar with the area, but we spent hours every day exploring the town. We even stumbled across Pike Place Market one afternoon. One morning, though, we got totally disorientated on our travels, and we couldn't find anyone to help us. Remember that this is pre-smartphone and sighted assistance and navigation apps. Finally, I said to my friend, look, I'll take it from here. My guide dog's name at the time was May, and I said, May, come on, let's go find the way. Let's go get dinner, May. Come on, let's go find the way. May turned left, and she turned right, and she turned left, and we crossed a few intersections, and she turned left again. And finally, I heard somebody walking towards us, and I said, excuse me, can you tell me where such and such hotel is? And the man replied, well, you're standing right in front of it. May should have been a homing pigeon.
That's really impressive.
That was a light bulb moment for me. It was then that I realized, hey, I can do this.
Well, there's nothing like success to instill confidence.
I don't want you all running out thinking that you have to get a guide dog, because that's not the way it usually works. Although it has come in handy sometimes, the few times it snows here, finding the house again. Always take the dog out before a meal. But it just illustrates what you can do despite your sight loss. And of course, you know, there were certain skills that I had to learn in order to be capable to do that. And there's things that are available now that weren't available at that time. Like I said, the smartphone, you know, the accessibility apps that are available are just mind-boggling, like the sighted assistance apps and the navigation apps. It's truly phenomenal.
And you have a fairly comprehensive list of apps and other tools that are very useful in the book.
Yeah. And as I said, it's just finding the ones that work best for you. You know, filling up your toolbox so that you have the tool, any particular tool is available to you when you need it. And things will change. What works for you today might be different in the next 6 months or 2 years from now.
Well, that was just a short list of some of the many tips that Lynn offers in her book. So if you want to find out more of them, you might want to get the book. And in case you missed any of that contact or resource information, it'll be in the show notes associated with episode 2608.
That's it for today's show. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about the craft of audio description. Audio description brings performances to life for blind audiences by turning visuals into clear narration. We'll talk with Roy Samuelson about writing and performing descriptions that match on-screen action, carry the emotion of scenes, and make the experience more enjoyable. He also teaches and advises others on how to do audio description well.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, available wherever you get your podcasts.
For show notes, resources, and more information, visit our website at eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for being part of our community. Until next time, I'm Peter Torpy.
And I'm Nancy Goodman Torpy. Thank you for listening.